Motoration, just how good can it get?
Up the mountain, black traffic is ahead of them, and that proves to be decisive. It's a Falcon, they are going to go past now, and it is in drag test. Well, the Canberra, over to Bob, Dale Reed. He doesn't prove their challenge to Skates, he moves over, and that does allow Skates just a little bit more of a buffer, as he knows that Brad Jones is going to catch these slower cars in a more difficult section of the track. And as our race leader, Mark Gates, makes it through the cutting and towards the top of the mountain. He's in Reed Park now and heads his way across the skyline. Brad Jones is trying to negotiate one of those back markers. He has not been able to make the inroads that he had hoped, certainly, as he headed up the mountain for the last time. On the skyline, Mark Gates out in front. Jones can still see him, though, and makes it in a little hope. There he is. This one being driven by Steve Reed and Trevor Ashby. Okay, working the way on the straight. He's just about cutting past Ashby and Reed now. Works his way towards the cutting for the towards the chase for the final time. Skate now has Ashby and Reed, and he's setting himself now for the cutting.
That's right, it's been a battle of survivors, given changing conditions during the day, and it looks like in this case HRT has been the survivor in this case, and they win the multi-million dollar prize, as they say.
You think that was close? How about this?
On lap 192, when Scott Sharp made the pass of Sam Hornish Jr., it made it 32 lead changes in this event, and that is a new record. Last time by for Sharp, 219.248 miles an hour. Three laps remain there in two.
You don't want to hiccup or you lose this, baby. Scott Sharp has got it. He dives down to the inside. Now Hornish goes down low. Now Hornish goes up high. Hornish is going to try to make the pass and take fuel with him.
Sam Hornish looked like he was going inside, then suddenly he made the move to the outside. Sam Hornish will zig, and then he'll zag. It is Hornish going to the inside of Scott Sharp. Sharp will protect the inside line. Now he'll go to the outside and turn number one, and he'll bring fuel with him.
Final two laps of the race. It's still Sharp, and here comes fuel high, and there goes Hornish high with him. Hornish pulls up on the right side. It's still Sharp one as they go to turn four.
Scott Sharp looking to make it a clean sweep here at Texas Motor Speedway in 2001, trying to get his third career win here. White flag is out. Less than a car length will separate the top three positions as they go through turn number one. Sam Hornish Jr. tries to go to the outside, but tucks back in at two.
That's the way they go. It's Sharp. It's Hornish. It is fuel. Down the back straight, settled up for three. Who's got it, Mike King?
As they come off of turn number three, it is going to be Scott Sharp holding the inside line. Sam Hornish Jr. pulls alongside. It's going to be a photo finish. Sam Hornish Jr. will win! Sam Hornish Jr. will win it by a nose. That's the finish as he comes off of turn number four and wins the Chevy 500. What a way to close out the 2001 season as Hornish wins by 18 thousandths of a second.
From the racetracks around Australia, here's Inside Motorsport.
Hi, I'm Peter Norton.
I'm Craig Revelle. Thanks for joining us once again on Inside Motorsport.
The San Remo Rally looks to be set to be now won by a Frenchman. Greg Strange of the BBC has the details as the rally is now into its final day.
Well, the top 10 drivers through stage 13, the opening stage of this final day, and the top three remain unchanged. It's Gilles Panizzi for Peugeot, Citroën Sebastian Loeb and Didier Auriol in the second of the Peugeots, 1-2-3. But Loeb has been charging. Panizzi's lead is cut to 26.8 seconds. Loeb's also drawn a little further clear of Didier Auriol. The world champion Marcus Grönholm, fourth overnight's in trouble. We think he's got power steering problems. He's so far lost a full minute and is down to sixth place. And Tommy Mäkinen is also in trouble, 11th overnight, and now with suspension problems on his mid Mitsubishi, but still apparently managing to close up a little on his rival in the Drivers' Championship, Ford's Colin McRae. Neither expect to score drivers' points here, but the French lead, the top three drivers are French, and Peugeot dominate, five Peugeot 206 cars in the top nine.
The FedEx Champ Car Series in Houston. Tom Michaels of the Kart Radio Network gives us this report.
Defending kart champion Gilles DeFerrin wins the pole for Sunday's Texaco Haviland Grand Prix of Houston, closing in on points leader Kenny Breck in the process.
Well, you know, these guys work really hard, and, you know, it's a long year for them. So as the championship winds to a close, you know, everybody's really on their toes. And, you know, I think this championship battle has got everybody excited.
DeFerrin, coming off his first win of the year at Rockingham, England 2 weeks ago, gets 1 point for winning the pole on the Houston Street Circuit, and is now just five behind Breck.
This point really helps us. As we're standing up front in a place like this is always helpful as well. So putting two and two together has been a pretty successful day today. But, you know, that's today. Now we got two more to worry about.
Most of Breck's points this year have come on ovals.
I can't really worry about what Gil is doing. I got to worry about what we're doing. And I think that Team Ray, Alan Ford, and myself and everybody involved, you know, we're just trying to do our best. And I have a great team behind me. And we focus on our own stuff and try to be as good as possible. And that's all we can do and all we can control. So, you know, it's what will be, will be.
Bruno Jacquera was second.
This morning was really difficult. And I think to improve the car as it did on qualify, and it's good to be on front row. It's not very good to be half a second from the pole, you know, but it's still a good position to start.
Quick, followed by Breck, Elio Castroneves, and Alex Tagliani. 6 through 10, Dario Franchitti, Scott Dixon, Cristiano D'Amato, Mauricio Guzman, and Tony Kanaan. From Houston, Tom Michaels reporting.
The postponed final of the IRL, the Chev 500, was run yesterday at the Texas Motor Speedway. Mike King of the Indianapolis Motorsport Radio Network wraps up the final of the 2001 Northern Lights Series.
33 lead changes today. The Indy Racing League only counts lead changes at the start-finish line. Here's the way they finished today. Sam Hornish Jr. winning.
Thanks. It's awesome to put on a show like this for the fans. The Pencil Panther guys, they did an awesome job as usual. Went out there and they got me in and out of the pits like we did needed to. Conserve fuel like we needed to, and it's good to come out here and win the Chevy 500 considering that's what we're going to be running next year.
By 18,000th of a second.
Unbelievable. I didn't think I had enough. I just went down another gear and thought I might have enough RPM to get by him, and I did, so that was it was fun.
Sam Hornish Jr. winning second over Scott Sharp.
It's awesome, I tell you. I mean, this place is just magical, you know. With our cars, Indy Racing League cars, with the level downforce we have on this track, it's just some magical racing. You know, you are 10-10ths all day and just waiting for holes to open. And it's some unbelievable racing, and I got to take my hat off to the man upstairs. I put a lot of prayer into him before that race because, you know, there's a lot that's out of your control as a driver. You're legging the thing around and around, wide open, waiting almost for something else to happen to change the circumstances.
Was there any contact out there at all? You guys were so close, three wide.
Never any contact. You know, Sam is one of the cleanest guys out here. He does race you real well, has raced, I think, most everybody all year real well. Even Robbie, you know, we all three raced hard as you can race, but very cleanly.
You guys are going to be moving that shop in Indy. You got a busy week ahead of you.
Yeah, we got a busy year. But hopefully the biggest thing is, you know, I'm just so proud of the Delphi team all year. I think we're having a lot of momentum. You know, if it wasn't for a few ill breaks we had during the season, I think we would have been more a factor in the championship. Maybe this is the momentum we need going into next year.
Robbie Buell was third.
No, I think that's, you know, that's what the Indy Racing League is all about. That's what this series has been building to, and what a way to end the year and then going into next year with everything that's going on for the Indy Racing League. And for us with the Purex car, it's nice to be on the podium. Unfortunately, we didn't win one this year, but the Infiniti Power's been great. We got a lot of people from Aventis here, so it's nice we're on the podium.
Eliseo Salazar was fourth. Rick Treadway was fifth. Alan Sir Jr., Ayrton Dari, Greg Ray, John Herbin, Buzz Calkins closed out the top ten. Laurent Radon, Billy Boat, Anthony Lazzaro, Robbie McGee, and Didier Andre. Top 15, Shige Hattori, Buddy Lazier, Eddie Cheever, Chris Menninga, and Jacques Lazier, top 20, Felipe Giafone, 21st, Billy Rowe, 22nd, Mark Dismore, 23rd, Jeff Ward, 24th, and Sarah Fisher, 25th. Also, we want to update you on the final points. Sam Hornish Jr., of course, the champion with 501 points. Buddy Lazier winds up with 398 points in second place. Scott Sharp was third with 355 points. Billy Boat winds up fourth, an outstanding year for the Kerr Bagajanian Beck Motorsports team. Eliseo Salazar with 308 points. Also, Felipe Giafone, he winds up sixth, dropping a couple of notches because of the performance today. Eddie Cheever, seventh. Buzz Calkins, eighth. Ayrton Dari, ninth. And Jeff Ward was 10th. What a year for Sam Hornish Jr. His sophomore season in the Indy Racing League, forget about the sophomore jinx, in 13 events this year, he won three times and celebrated on the podium 10 times. The Buckeye Bullet, like we said, is the new sheriff in town when it comes to the Indy Racing League.
Joining us now is the winner of the GDP 2-hour showdown at Bathurst, Peter Floyd. Peter, for you, a great win up there on the mountain yesterday.
Oh, look, it was a fabulous result. Our car went flawlessly all weekend, and it's thanks to the great effort of my team and all the work they put into it. And, we're ecstatic about the win. It's just a bit disappointing that we didn't actually get to be up on the podium at the end of it. But, yes, we're still pleased.
Of course, for you, teaming up with Cameron McConville, who was able to put that car on pole, but the four-wheel drives had a bit of a jump on you at the start.
Oh, we knew the four-wheel drives would get off the line quick. They've been doing that all year. That really wasn't a concern of ours. We wanted to make sure that we didn't damage the clutch or the gearbox on the start. The car's a very heavy start with a full fuel load. We've got to be careful and we've got to get it rolling. And no point in breaking down at the start line. So we just took it easy off the start and settled into a nice race pace that we felt that was going to conserve the car and put us there at the end, which turned out to be the result.
Of course, with the car that you're running, which is a 300 kilowatt Commodore, obviously it's one of the cars that does have the legs up and down the mountain.
Oh, of course, yeah. The Commodore is ideally suited to a place like Bathurst. Huge grunt up Mountain Straight and then back down Conroy Straight again. Not all the tracks that we've raced on this season have been very suited to our cars. Sandown was a good track for us. Bathurst has obviously been a good track for us, and Adelaide was also a good track for the Commodores. But because we're such a big, heavy car, we're not so nimble and we don't get around the other tracks as well. But yeah, we were looking forward to coming to Bathurst because we knew it was going to be strong here.
Well, as you were mentioning, one of the problems was that you weren't up on the podium because of a confusion that was brought about after that accident with a little Volkswagen on top of the hill. But no doubt you'll get plenty of press coverage to make up for that.
Oh, I hope so. Yes, I hope so.
Well, Peter, congratulations on your win there up at Bathurst, and hopefully we'll catch up with you next round of the Procar Series.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. Winner of the six-cylinder touring class, the Pilwright Championship there in the GDP 2-hour race at Bathurst Day was Rob Chadwick, joined there by Warren Luff. Rob, how do you reckon that win was yesterday for you and your team?
It was excellent, having been up here for 5 years, and this is the year that we stood on the top step, so it was very sweet.
Now, for yourself, you've been campaigning the Mitsubishi Magna for a couple of years now, and you really seem to have that car moving quite well.
Yeah, we've been running the Magnas for 5 years. 97 was our first run, and predominantly for Bathurst. We've gone through a couple of models of them, but yeah, it's going very well. We're getting best turn of speed we've ever had out of it.
How do you find that the Magna goes up there around that mountain, particularly the top twisty bits?
Well, if you start at the bottom of the mountain and work your way up, it's got good torque, so it gets up the mountain well, and it's also got quite good legs. And across the top, it's very good and very stable in the change of direction, and you can basically keep it flat from exit of the cutting right through to skyline, and then going down the hill, you can drive it down the hill rather than having to sort of coast down. So it's pretty well suited to the mountain.
Now, yesterday, conditions were interesting in the fact that there was that big fire for little Volkswagen, which led to the safety car, stirred things up a bit, of course.
Yeah, that was very dramatic. I came round just after the accident had occurred, and there was flame coming from the left-hand rear wheel, and they obviously had trouble getting it out because it was still there 3 laps later. And I had a lot of personnel there, so that was quite a nasty accident from the look of it.
Now, of course, you were teamed up with Warren Luff, who we've seen before running around in the little Mitsubishi Mirage in the Mirage series.
That's right. Warren's an excellent driver. He's won the Mirage series twice. He's been very competitive in the Porsches. He's had experience in 2-litre cars and also the V8 supercars. So he's a very rounded driver, and be coming to the mountain and looking who we would like to put in the car. Warren was top of the list and agreed to come and drive with us, and we were very pleased to have him on board.
Mm. In terms of the campaign with the Magna, where do you head to next?
Our last round of the championship is on the last weekend in November at Oran Park. We're currently third in the championship and still in a shot of taking out second, so our aim is to knock the Camry off in the last round so we can take second in the championship.
And how does the Magna like Oran Park?
Oran Park long circuit is very good for us. The higher speed and the change of direction suits us very well. We've had a couple of wins there, so we're hoping we can repeat that effort.
Mm. Well, Rob, congratulations on your class win yesterday at Bathurst, and we look forward to catching up with you again in a few weeks' time at Oran Park.
Thank you very much. We were very, very happy with the win.
Thank you.
Robert Chadwick there, winner of Class D at the two-hour showroom showdown. And what an event that was. Look, in the British Touring Car Championship, Vauxhall has confirmed its commitment for 2002. In fact, the top team gives the series a huge boost by returning to defend its title next year. Vauxhall has given the British Touring Car Championship a vote of confidence by confirming that it will continue in the series for the next 2 weeks with works-backed Astras. Now, with Vauxhall having been so dominant this year's series, wrapping up the team's championship halfway through the season, then one of its leading drivers, either Jason Plateau or Jan Muller, will take out the title at Brands Hatch on this weekend's racing. The car manufacturer's decision to stay with the series will be key to maintaining the momentum of the championship, which is still in its development stages after going back to basics for this year in an effort to reduce the spiralling costs of the BTCC. Now, whilst Vauxhall has confirmed that it will run two cars next year, it has admitted that last month it may seek outside backing to supplement the 2002 budget. Team 888, which is a team partly owned by former Formula One driver Derek Warwick, which is running the cars once again next year, is also expected to want to continue with its extra two-car team, but will need to secure extra funding, and that has yet to be confirmed whether their team will have that extra backing. And, of course, there's John Clellan has also gone away and raced this weekend. We do see that a very interesting grid is in its place for today's racing at Brands Hatch. And of course, Colin, the Brands Hatch news is quite exciting in the BTCC.
Well, that's right, Jet. The qualifying for the two races there, first of all, in the shorter sprint race, it's Ivan Muller in the Vauxhall Astra Coupe, who's taken out the pole position there from his Vauxhall Astra teammate Jason Plato, with James Thompson running out the top three, also another Astra. But then in fourth, there's Warren Hughes in one of the new MGZS. The interesting part comes in the feature race, where it is Warren Hughes in the MG who's taken pole position in what is only the second outing for that particular car. The car only debuted a month ago at Silverstone. So for the West Surrey Racing Team with their Lowell-designed MG, things are looking good for them with a pole position. Now, of course, because of the way that the championship points are set up, the MG team weren't up 4 points because they joined the season late. So therefore, Ivan Muller, who's actually second on the grid with Phil Bennett third, then Plato fourth, gets the position, the pole points for both of those races. But for him, that's looking good for the British Touring Car Championship, because already MG, Vauxhall said they're going back in again. MG are looking at as well for next year, Peugeot as well. Now, in terms of other international touring car racing taking place around this weekend, there's, of course, the latest round of the DTM, and there for the first time this season, it's Michael Bartels, who is the pole man for the final round at Hockenheim. In behind him, he has Holland's Patrick Huisman, and then there is a session that actually was, which was red flagged, and as it was, people went all over the place. So it is, as I say, quite unusual, the fact that They've got, for once, an Opal sitting on the pole position there, and a bit of a scattered grid, a bit different to usual. People not having a good run whatsoever. Yesterday as well, there was the American Le Mans Series race at Road Atlanta, and there it was an Audi 1, 2 and 3, but in this case around it was the factory team car of Frank Bielan and Manuel Pirro were the winners from the privateer car, the champion back car of Johansson and Lemaire, with another privateer car of Wallace and Herbert running out the top three there. The other team car of Christensen crashed out early in the race. One of the drives worthy of note was that of the Pinots of David Brabham and Jan Magnussen. The car lost nearly 40 minutes in the pits after a collision with a backmarker and dropped out of the top 30, but climbed back to finish 10th overall by the finish of the race. And as it was, that put the crash out of Tom Christensen in the second of the factory Audis, put paid to Ronaldo Capello's title chances. So Emanuele Pirro has clinched the American Le Mans Series title, and that's good for him. Of course, the final race of the year, which was to be held at Sepang in Malaysia, was cancelled, and as well the Nations Cup race, which was going to support that event up there, has been cancelled as well, and they're actually now going to be running that race at Oran Park in a couple of weeks' time. Last weekend as well, they held the latest round of the European Touring Car Championship, and there it was a double win for Gabriele Tarquini. He won the first race from James Thompson. Fabrizio Giovinardi, who's his main title contender there in the Alfa Romeo, was third. Nicola Guarini fourth. Matt Neal and Nissan Primera finished fifth. And Gianluca De Lorenzo in a BMW 320 finished in sixth place. In the second race, Gabriele Tarquini pulled off one of the most spectacular overtaking moves of the season to score the second race win of the weekend at Jarama in Spain. He started 15th on the reverse grid after his race one win and clawed his way into the top 10 on the opening lap, for which was led by privateer BMW racer Paulo Zadra. And as it was, the Fabrizio Giovinardi was very lucky to escape unscathed from a start line collision which with Matt Neal's Nissan Primera, which put Neal into the pit wall and out of the race. Apparently Matt Neal was slightly injured in that, which was one of the secondary reasons why he didn't come out to run this weekend at Bathurst with Paul Morris. There was also the worry of the fact that he could not get, if he came out here and was injured further in this race, or he may not be able to get over and back in time. Now, the other interesting point is that this week as well was an announcement the FIA has given the World Motorsport Council, the FIA, Motorsport's governing body, has given the green light to the new Super 2000 rules for next year's European Touring Car Championship. The FIA wanted assurances that three manufacturers were going to homologate models to the new rules and that at least 18 cars would be on the grid next year. Although BMW pulled out of negotiation at the last minute, Nissan has filled the breach to join Alfa Romeo and Volvo in the pact to support new regulations. The FIA gave the go-ahead to the regulations last Wednesday, and both Super 2000 and Super Production cars will race together in the series, although only Super 2000 drivers will be eligible for the ETCC title. The three manufacturers will now confer on which common components they will use to cut costs, another of the FIA's stipulations. Alfa Romeo has committed to build between 6 and 8 cars running 2 or 3 as factory entries. Volvo has said it's received a lot of interest from teams and is currently developing its car with British preparation experts ProDrive, who are expected to run some of the S60 cars. Nissan has not made a firm commitment beyond agreeing to homologate cars for customers. And naturally enough, Matt Neal, being one of the people who's been running for Nissan in this year's ETC and also in the British Touring Car Championship, is very likely to be the person who picks it up, so no doubt didn't want to be far away with those negotiations going on. Both Seat and Volkswagen have said they wish to join the series if it is a success in 2003 and 2004, respectively. BMW Italy has also thought likely to upgrade Super Production cars to Super 2000 specification next year. And the dates for the 2002 FIA European Touring Car Championship are Monza, Italy on April 21st, Silverstone in the UK on May 5th, Circuit to be advised in Spain on May 19th, Brno or Zolder, or Lausitzring in Germany on June 2nd, Anderstorp in Sweden on June 30, Spa-Francorchamps in Belgium on August 4, Zandvoort in Holland on September 8, Nürburgring Germany on September 22nd, Italy or Estoril in Portugal on September the 6th, and Magny-Cours in France on October 20. So things looking good there for the European Touring Car Championship, getting bigger and better once again. As well, in terms of other news, In terms of the FIA GT Championship, which was run last weekend as well, it was a win there for the ProDrive Ferrari 550M of Alain Menion and Richard Rydell. They were the winners in the race, in the FIA GT Championship race, on over 111 laps. They were the winners over Vincent Voss and Boris Deutschenberg
in a Belmondo Chrysler Viper. Third place was another one of the Belmondo Chrysler Vipers out of Anthony Cumpen and Emanuele Clerico. And another Chrysler Viper, this time from the Labar team, was the fourth car, Christopher Bouchot and Jean-Philippe Belloc. And then fifth was the first of the list of Storm GTs of Julian Bailey and Nicholas Springer. So the FIA GT Championship, it's sort of winding down as well. Their final race also in Belgium next weekend, as is the final round of the European Touring Car Championship. Again, it comes down to Gabriele Tarquini and Fabrizio Giovinardi of Alfa Romeo, the Honda and the Alfa Man, both fighting it out for that championship. And we now throw to the Formula One press conference from the Indianapolis Grand Prix last weekend, where Mika Häkkinen, the man who said he's retiring from Formula One, has announced the fact that he's still going to have a year off. And we now have the press conference with Mika Häkkinen, the man who was top of the podium.
Mika, that was a truly fantastic race. You started fourth and fought your way through to the front. You must be truly overjoyed. You certainly look it.
Yeah, that was definitely one of the highlights of this season for me, definitely. And winning a British Grand Prix this year was for me was something that I always wanted to in my book, basically. And Indianapolis was the other one, and this is it, you know. I'm absolutely still a bit confused, to be honest, to experience what has happened today. Particularly because of this morning incident, what happened to me, damaged the race car, so mechanics did the fantastic work to able to fix that, first of all, and second thing was I went through the red lights today, this morning in free practice, and the stewards decided to give me a penalty for that, and they dropped me to second row. I qualified second, so they put me in fourth position. So disappointing it was, obviously, and all that frustration what happened this morning, and to sitting here in the middle and winning Grand Prix, it's just flat out, you know. I don't know, you know, I'm just incredible. I'm very happy, pleased. I don't know the words to even say, you know.
Thank you very much, Mika. Michael, last year it was your day here at Indianapolis, but today it was Mika's. How did you feel about your race?
Well, pretty, I say, straightforward. Not many excitements except the one I had with Montoya. I don't know where he was coming from. I mean, I looked in the mirrors and he was quite far back when I left turn 11. And then I saw him coming flying at me down the straight. I tried to make it as difficult as possible, but obviously our tyres at this stage in the end of their life weren't as good as their tyres. I mean, he was all over me before that, and so he got me, except that it was pretty boring. We were struggling a bit with traffic just before the pit stop time, and that was it. Mika, I think he won fair and square. Pretty happy for him, because to some degree justice came probably into place after what happened to him this morning, and therefore I think today the results, at least I can live very well with that. I'm a bit disappointed obviously for Rubens, who could have been in second position today, but yeah, I think it's our first engine failure we have had this year, if I'm right, and in this perspective, that's not too bad, but would have probably been better happening to me rather than to him.
Thank you very much, Michael. Over to David. Talking of that engine failure for Rubens Barrichello, you were chasing Michael very hard, and then as you came past Rubens at the end, you appeared to get a whole face full of oil. Did that add a little extra excitement to your closing laps, or no problem at all?
Yeah, obviously I was catching Michael a little bit, but I didn't expect that if I actually got on his rear wing, it would be particularly easy to overtake. But nonetheless, I was just trying to push to the pace that I could in my car. And I think I've been very fortunate today. I've obviously benefited from other people's misfortune, allowed me to come back up into third place. Very happy for Mika. Before the race, he wasn't so sure of what his chances of winning were. And I told him I'm pretty confident he could win this race with the tyre situation. And then obviously with what happened to him earlier in the day, I think as Michael mentioned, it was justice to turn it around. And obviously it's helped me a little bit in the championship, the fact that Ruben's dropped out. It's never nice to accept points that way, but I've had a lot of misfortune in my racing career, so you have to take the results as they come.
Thank you, David. Back to Mika. One more race before you spend the year on the beach or wherever you're choosing to spend it in 2002. What chance another win next time out in the final round at Suzuka, a circuit where you always seem to go very well?
Well, we have definitely something coming up in a pipeline in a factory, and we are confident that our performance of the car is going to be better in Suzuka. Everybody's trying very hard, and like this weekend I'm very impressed of the team, particularly the mechanics, what they have done. Like on Friday they changed the engine in 35 minutes, which was incredible result, I thought. So that kind of things, you know, you can see the team is extremely motivated. They want to win. The factory is working maximum performance at the moment, and they bring in new parts, new things for Suzuka, that way we can perform and to go quicker. They are there, they are pushing really hard. I'm very happy, and so I go to Suzuka that way. I try to win, and we try to, with David and with the team, we try to get the maximum result, and that's it, and then hasta la vista.
But of course, the point that Mika Häkkinen was making about Suzuka, of course, is the fact that currently in the World Championship, in terms of first place, we know that Michael Schumacher has secured the championship for this year, but second place in the championship is still open, and Rubens Barrichello or David Coulthard are both in the running for second place in the championship, and also it means that McLaren can also potentially salvage a bit of pride in taking a couple of additional race wins. In terms of finishing second in the championship, Rubens Barrichello for Ferrari must win at the Suzuka Grand Prix, and David Coulthard must finish fourth or lower. At the same time, of course, you can imagine David Coulthard, he plans to finish ahead of Barrichello no matter what, so that he can secure second place in the World Drivers' Championship for this year, which also puts him in a very good position for next year with his new co-driver, Kimi Räikkönen. Of course, as we mentioned, that was the final Grand Prix for Murray Walker. And to mark the occasion, there were a number of different ceremonies and presentations that were made to Murray Walker, including, apparently, on the European broadcast, which we didn't get to see, a collection of Murray's greatest Murrayisms during his years of commentating Formula One, including his usual things, you know, that there's no way he could lose from here, whereupon the guy promptly spears it into the wall. So Murray Walker, of course, somebody who will be sadly missed, but amongst the presentations, he received a plaque and one of the original 3 million bricks used to pave the Indianapolis Motor Speedway when it was built in 1911. Tony George, who's the CEO and IMS president of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, made that presentation to Murray Walker. And, of course, there are lots of stories going around about things that Murray Walker has done over the years. And, as I say, he'll be somebody who'll be very sadly missed from the Formula One scene. Of course, we mentioned last weekend that in terms of the Australian Super Touring Championship and the Toka Tourist Future Tours, which was due to start in a couple of weeks' time, a first round at Oran Park, that has now all been thrown into disarray with Channel 7 pulling out of the broadcasting arrangements and Toka removing themselves from being a series organiser. That's now been picked up by the Power Tour people who run the truck racing, the American V8s, and of course a number of other categories there. The Super Tourers and Future Tourers will now join the Power Tour bill, and they'll be participating in the final two rounds of the Power Tour series, Winton on October 21, and then Calder a few weeks after that as well. They're now looking to organise additional dates, picking up some of the dates and venues that were being organised by Toka to run the Super Tourers and Future Tourers, because there are a number of teams, drivers and competitors who are still interested in running in that championship and basically trying to do the best they can into this season. That's a sort of an interesting situation, of course, that with the Toka pulling out, no doubt there's a few people around the place saying, well, you know, sort of they're gone and bye, but I must admit, having been to a number of their race meetings, it is some very competitive racing, some very close racing, and probably the type of racing that if you ever get the opportunity to go along and see it, I know those who went and saw it at Wakefield Park earlier this year and late last year,
thoroughly enjoy themselves, because it is a class of racing that is thoroughly enjoyable. One of the other interesting stories this week is, of course, the fact that there is further evidence that's been coming through regarding the Senna crash, and apparently a documentary in the UK had data that was supplied by the Williams team from Senna's crashed car, and they are basically now concluding the fact that Senna lost control when the car grounded on cold tyres after following the pace car. Okay, we now have from the press conference and the press centre at Bathurst, Peter Norton with his report on this weekend's great race up at Bathurst.
Hello there, gents. That really was quite an amazing day's racing here. Quite a good crowd of 50,000 people packing in for today's big race. And they really did brace some quite interesting weather. We've had snow, we've had hail, we've had rain, we've had dry. Really was quite remarkable. And the drama and excitement here really is just unparalleled in Australian racing. Particularly when the Bathurst October weather comes along, it really does make it unpredictable and a very tough race to win. You really do have to be thinking on your feet and to put yourself in a position for that last final sprint home. And it was Mark Scaife from the Holden Racing team with Tony Longhurst who really did outclass the field in the end by having that strategy, had them there, and then they had the speed to finish that off. And we also have a sort of package piece that I put together. Also, we'll have a chat to some of the drivers involved, Scaife, Jones, Murphy and Lowndes. We'll have a chat to each of those, and we'll just plug it in for our package little piece. Even though it was one of the hot favourites who took victory in this year's V8 Supercar 1000 at Bathurst, it's hard to believe that the race could be more exciting and more dramatic than previous years, but it was. With 8 safety cars covering over 40 laps, we had 11 real contenders for the race. The first of those to strike problems, though, was Pertec Racing, Marcus Ambrose and Wayne Wakefield, starting off pole position. They got a pretty average start, and they were one of the first to get caught out by the tricky conditions. Another one of the contenders and one of the favourites was Steve Johnson and Paul Radisich in car 17. They had engine problems and they were out quite reasonably early in the race as well. One of the surprise packets this weekend was John Bowe and Simon Wills in the Caterpillar Racing Ford. Also not finishing, but they were a real contender throughout the whole weekend, being in the top couple for most of the practice sessions and leading some parts of the race today. It really was a fine effort from that team, which is going to expand and become bigger and better in the years to come. Another car that was not to finish was car number 2 from the Holden Racing team, Jason Bright and Thomas Mazira. Their run ended up in the Caltex Chase sand trap on lap 126. Unfortunately, that really does kill off Jason Bright's championship hopes with the double points at this race, meaning the zero call from here puts him out of contention absolutely. Another one of the contenders and crowd favourites is Craig Lowndes. The Ford Falcon did cover 156 laps, which was just a couple short of the 161. Really, their race ended when Craig Lowndes was leading the race and slid into the tyre barriers at the Forest Elbow. And unfortunately, the weight of the tyres resting on the car meant that he couldn't simply select reverse and back out of it and continue on. They lost 3 laps at that point, and that was really the end of the day for them. We'll have a chat to Craig Lowndes a little bit later in this report. Another one of the Ford contenders that really was going very well, and with about 50 laps remaining, it looks as though Glenn Seaton really could break the hoodoo and take his victory on his 18th attempt. But unfortunately, had a guard rub on a tyre, which required them to take an extra pit stop, and that really buggered up their chances as well. They were the last car on the lead lap, finishing ninth outright. Another car that looked like it could have easily have taken victory was car 11, Larry Perkins and Russ Lingle, also contenders in the championship, but unfortunately, they're really up against it. They need a perfect score in the remaining rounds, and they need misfortune to strike Mark Scaife for them to have any chance at all. They narrowly missed some of the troubles of cars going off in the Caltex Chase late in the race. Larry Perkins keeping it on the black stuff, but unfortunately he then dashed into the pits to try to take advantage of a safety car, basically overcooking his pit entry, spinning on the chicanes as he led into the pit and clobbered one of the walls. Managed to continue with a rather deranged car, and I think they, in the circumstances, probably pretty relieved to walk away with 8th position. Starting 7th, finishing 7th was Super Cheap Auto Racing of Stephen Elder and Jeff Bradham. A fairly fine effort there, really staying with the leaders all day long, just not quite having that outright pace to convert that into anything more. One car that was playing quite a lot of gambles with pitch strategy was Garth Tander and Jason Barguana, trying to repeat their victory from last year. All sorts of fancy pitch strategies of trying to maximise fuel economy and stretch their pit windows and things like that, but unfortunately it didn't quite come together, although they did have some interesting charges at times trying to make up positions lost. Absolutely amazing result for Jim Richardson in Canto. After about lap 50, they'd already made 4 pit stops, but using some clever strategy, remaining on the lead lap throughout, they managed to stay in contention, and then late in the day, as people had problems on the slick road, they managed to really be a contender there in car number 6. They finished number 5. The other of the second team cars, this time from Shell Helix Racing, that put on a very surprising run was Cameron McLean and Greg Ritter, mixing it with the best there for many laps, but again, not quite having the outright speed at the end when it really mattered. So now we're down to the top 3, and these guys really did put on a ding-dong battle. Car 15 from the Kmart Racing team, Todd Kelly and Greg Murphy, they passed quite a few cars late in the race to clinch that third position, and really some excellent effort from that Kmart team. I think really the surprise packet of the day, though, was Brad Jones and John Cleland. Qualifying around 22nd or 23rd, they really didn't seem to be a chance at all. But come the longer race, their car durability and some of their race pace and strategy really did come together, and they managed to mostly stay out of trouble. And in the closing stages, Brad Jones really did put on a stirring effort trying to haul in the Holden Racing team of Mark Scaife, but it really just wasn't to be. One or two laps where he overcooked it in his desperation trying to catch Scaife, made the lead blow out to about 3 seconds, and Mark Scaife ended up taking what sort of looked like a comfortable victory there at the end by the 3 odd seconds, but he really had to work hard. They had to battle through a lot of the race thinking about the strategy, maximising fuel economy to really put them in a place ready for that final sprint, and it really was quite a sprint, sort of almost for the 60 laps of the last 60 laps of the race, but then a late safety car bunched them again, but Mark Scaife really dominated that last stint to really take control, and have to go off to Mark Scaife and Tony Longhurst and the Holden Racing team. They were there when it counted, they had the speed when it counted. But so let's have a chat to Scaife, Jones and Murphy, and we'll also have a chat to Lowndes to see how his day ended up as well. Glenn Seaton, another tough day at the office at Bathurst.
Oh, sure was, but actually we had two cars in the top 10, which is the only team that had it out there. But so we'll be back again. We'll be back again, and next year hopefully we'll go that next step and win it.
That's right, and it must be a really building your confidence to see that your form this year has turned around.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Just new cars working really well, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the year.
Mark Scaife, congratulations on a fantastic victory in the Bathurst 1000. What do you think was the turning point that allowed you to take control of the race?
Well, look, I don't think there was really any turning point. I suppose our ability to be near the front there at the end, and we were able to calculate the field to such a sort of close degree that, you know, we knew we could get to the end, but only just. But I didn't really want to race the other guys, to be honest, because I would have much rather, you know, try to conserve the fuel. But the way it turned out, I had to short shift, we had to change the mixture, and we had to basically drive the wheels off it from the end of Mountain Straight to Forest Elbow, and luckily today we're able to do it.
Were there many moments towards the start in the middle of the race where you thought you just have to sit back and bag championship points?
No, we weren't bagging championship points. We were basically moving back in the field a couple of times because we knew that the consumption was so important. Very, very easy today with the speed of the race to have us stop go like splash and dash to the end, and the way it worked, you know, we led the race pretty easily early, which was a good sign for our speed. But what we had to do in the end was slow up.
and that's what we did, and the strategy worked, and, you know, it's all credit to our guys who were able to work that out and to think on their feet, because that's what this business is all about.
Now, of course, there's some debate about whether this race should be part of the championship or double points. Obviously, you're pleased it is.
Oh, well, look, I'm pleased because that's the way it's worked today, but, you know, on other days I wouldn't be. It's, you know, arguably the weighting of the points is too severe for Bathurst, and, you know, we'll look at that for next year.
Well, it looks like you're heading towards back-to-back championships. Congratulations, Mark Scott.
Well, don't put the lock on us yet, but yeah, I hope so.
Brad Jones, congratulations on a fighting second place in the Bathurst 1000. Is this the toughest final stint you think you've driven?
Yeah, it probably is the toughest final stint. The only other race that I felt that my driving was like that was in 94, and Craig finished the race. So, yeah, that was a tough final stint, but it's much nicer being in the car than standing and people watching, let me tell you.
And do you see this as the turning point for the Aussie male team and the sort of coming of age in the V8 Supercars?
Well, you know, it's really hard to know. The Aussie male team have done a fantastic job this weekend, and I'd like to think we're going to carry on, but we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, the truth is we didn't qualify too well today, but we raced fast, and that's been something that we've been doing a bit of lately, so who knows? I hope it is. I hope it's that turning point. We aim for a podium this year. Who would have thought that it was the biggest race of the year that we'd end up on the podium?
Were there any scary points there throughout the race that might have made it all come undone?
Oh, yeah, there's a couple, but probably the worst one was when it started to hail at the top of the hill, and Murph had rolled out of the throttle, and so it's Scapey, and I saw Scapey arrow off, and I went, ha, gotcha. And as soon as I went to turn in, I went off straight after him and almost hit the wall, went straight through the sand pit at the top of the hill. So that was a bit of a moment. And, you know, I was yelling at my brother that I needed to come in for wets, and he kept me out. So, yeah, it worked out, you know, as it turns out, it was good.
Brad Jones, congratulations. Look forward to seeing you at in the podium positions, maybe one step higher in the races to come.
Great, me too. Thanks very much.
Al? Greg Murphy, fantastic fighting charge there to third place. Tell us about your day.
Well, it was one of the toughest days I've had in motor racing. It was just fantastic. Last year was really tough too, but this year was just an awesome race. We had a very good car today, and Todd and I drove the wheels off it all day long, and you know, we could have quite easily, I think, been two places further up, but we're third and been happy with that. I think it's been a pretty tough day for everybody, so we're at.
What were the turning points, do you think, that stopped you from getting that top step?
I think right at the end we probably made a little bit of a mistake not coming in for the final stop when we should have, I think, because we had some electronic failure with the telemetry. We didn't quite know how much fuel the car was using, and so we probably came in a lap too late when we probably should have been in, and we lost a lot of spots because the pace car was out, and so we lost some time there.
Well, Greg Murphy, thanks very much for putting on a very entertaining charge late in the race. We look forward to bigger and better things next time.
Thanks, mate.
Craig Lowndes, you've done it again. You've kept your chin up and kept smiling through adversity.
Well, I guess you've always got to look on the hindsight that, you know, we probably got a pretty good job, and, you know, we tried to conquer the mountain this year. Unfortunately, it didn't come, so, you know, we'll have to wait for next year.
How frustrating was it stuck under those tyres at the Forest Elbow, and knowing you had a car that was probably okay still, and just waiting for someone to pull you out?
Yeah, probably a bit, I guess, pretty frustrating in the sense that I didn't think the car was that badly damaged at all. So, you know, it's just a matter of getting it out. I don't think the marshals understood that the car probably wasn't as bad as they thought it was, and you know, they got a flat top to come and get me, where really all I needed was just a tow out. So you know, it's just one of those things. Unfortunately, put us three laps down, and that was really the end of our race.
How was the car up until that point?
Oh, it was beautiful. The car was really good. Like you know, I think we've shown that in the wet or the dry, the car was really adaptable. And I just made a mistake. We went into Forest Elbow with a lot of rain and just washed out. Unfortunately for everyone else that went into Forest Elbow that hit the wall managed to keep going. I didn't, but you know, it's just one of those things.
And what about lessons learned for next year?
Well, at least we've got a good sort of baseline now to start next year, and we'll see what happens when we get up here.
Craig, thanks very much. You're always the entertainer. We look forward to seeing you do better next time.
Thank you.
So there you have it. Each year the teams come to Bathurst saying it's a 161-lap sprint, and as we've heard from the drivers, it is actually a fuel economy run in certain stints, and plenty of teams have mechanical problems and things wear out. This mountain is much tougher than the people who think they can come here and just treat it as a sprint race. So, fellas, how did it look over at the TVs at home?
Well, obviously, the TV view is one that's a little bit different to some of them that's around out there. And, of course, I suppose it depends whether you're getting the normal as-you-are-fed view or whether you're paying or have access to digital. Where we are here, we, of course, don't have access to digital, so we just take what they feed us. And it looked
fairly good. Unfortunately, the one thing I would say is that, as usual, when in the build-up to the race, there was an awful lot of concentration on the season that's been to date, rather than actually showing you what's going on in the build-up to the race. And quite often, I think some of the directors and editors go too much for the glitz and not enough of actually what's going on in the event. But a very interesting day's racing, and particularly the continually changing weather conditions, which must prove maybe somebody up there in the gods of weather don't like some of the things that some of the people have been saying up there.
Ah, well, that's one reading of it, or you could say that the weather gods are actually sort of gambling at heart, and they're sort of rolling the dice and seeing what people could come up with. And, of course, they come up with quite a classic race and plenty of drama, and it really is quite remarkable that through all that drama, one of the hot favourites gets up and wins.
Well, that's right. I think, really, if we looked at Mark Scaife's tactics throughout the day, the fact that quite often they were prepared in the early stages of the race to sort of back off rather than push the point where there are overtaking moves going on, and basically preserve and conserve the car, stay out of trouble until the latter part of the day, and then basically go for it as hard as they could.
Yes, that's right. And it's interesting when we look at the championship now, Mark Scaife, you heard him say that he doesn't want to claim any victories there yet, because mathematically he hasn't quite got it there. But his lead is, was it 45 points short of 500 or odd? So he's got, you know, around a 500 point buffer now. And in the remaining two races, there's about 500 points remaining. Mark Scaife picked up, you know, double points, 552 points here this weekend. He could have picked up more if he had have had pole position. He really needs to have shockers, not get a single point from the remaining two races. Russell Ingall, who's second in the championship, really needs a perfect points haul from both of those to have any chance. So mathematically, it's there. It's a long shot. But I think we can put down the glasses on this one. Mark Scaife has his second championship in the bag.
Yeah, it was interesting to note probably one of the underrated drives of the day, I think, was that of the number 18 Shell Helix team Falcon of Cameron McLean and Greg Ritter, who were the second stringers to the favoured Stephen Johnson and Paul Rasich, who were looking very, very good there near the tail end of the race.
Yes, I was quite amazed at their effort. There were a couple of points there. One notable point was when Larry Perkins was catching them and hounding the back of them. And you know, I was quite worried, thinking that these guys are going to come to grief. You can imagine trying to keep Larry behind you. They put up a brave fight, let Larry get past. And in the end, they did better than Larry because they stayed out of trouble a bit more than other people. Yes, hats off to these guys. They've done a great effort for... You know, Cameron McLean has lots of experience in V8 supercars from his own team, but Greg Ritter, a relative unknown, he's really put on a fantastic effort there. I'm sure he'll be back a bit bigger and better in other V8 supercar long-distance events. And also the number 6 Falcon, Dean Canto, also put in a fantastic effort. And Jim Richards, as always, he was the foundation for that car, number 6, putting in a lot of the setting the car up during the weekend, the qualifying, and he was the lead driver. He may be one of the veterans, but he can still put together a mighty fine race effort.
That's right. Jim Richards and Dean Canto, particularly Jim, given the number of times he's been around Bathurst in I don't know how many different types of cars, he really did put in quite a strong and steady drive. And when the pressure was on, Dean Canto, I think, responded very, very well. It was interesting to see that a number of teams that, you know, where there were people who were highly favoured, seem to burn themselves out fairly early on in the day and make mistakes that, given the pressures that are on the event, we look at typically the mistake made by Marcus Ambrose coming into the pits. You know, something as silly as that, you know, just overcooking it coming to the pits, and it just ruins the day for them.
Yes, that's right. It's a big race, there's a lot of pressure, and I mean, Marcus Ambrose, he's come here for his very first time, and he has first-hand experienced the highest of the highest, being on pole position and all of the hype that that takes, to the lowest of lows of being really the first person to just make a silly mistake. I mean, others were caught out with the weather conditions and slippery track, whereas Marcus, he really did it, simply overcook it on the way into the pits, and that was a crying shame for that team. I think we have to look out for Marcus Ambrose in the future as he gets more and more experience on these circuits. He's not going to get any slower. He's already very fast,
with experience, will come some more of the consistency and stability in that team. That's going to be a good one. He's recently re-signed with them, the Stone Brothers taking up an option. I think that takes Marcus Ambrose with that team to the end of 2003. They've also confirmed their Pertec sponsorship during the week. So they've got all of the pieces locked in there for a couple of years. We can expect them to do some mighty fine things in the years to come.
One of the other teams that seemed to shine and do quite well, of course, was Steve Ellery and Jeff Brabham in the Super Cheap Auto Falcon. Again, a team that is always knocking around the edges of the top 10, the top 15, but today a lot of the time they were running right up there at the pointy end of the field.
That's right. They were sort of the quiet achievers, really, across the whole weekend. You know, they were consistently up there in the top 10, as you've said, throughout all the qualifying sessions and everything. They just really lacked that something special there towards the end to be able to really match it when it really counted. But, yes, a very fine effort from them. And they're a small team with limited resources, like a lot of the other teams who finished much further down the field than they did. So hats off to them. Super Cheap Auto, great supporters of motorsport throughout lots of categories, and it's great to see their investment in Steve Ellery and the other people in that team starting to pay off.
Now, in terms of the feeling up at the mountain this weekend, how has the feeling been? You know, is there sort of the pressure there for improvements to Bathurst? Has there been much talk about, you know, what the future of Bathurst is?
Yes, a lot of sort of political lobbying going on. On Friday, they had SAVE written above Mount Panorama. They've been handing out in the car parks as you pull up sort of brochures saying, please contact your local member. You know, we have to make some noise to try to get this funding for the upgrade. On Friday, if you go hand in hand with the SAVE sign up on the hill, was a press conference representative from IMG and also from the Bathurst City Council trying to make this fuss, really put the push on with the lead up to the election. They were really met with some fairly cynical audience here in the media centre, putting some pretty pointed and tough questions at them, things about it being a once-a-year event, so how can you compare it to the MCG or other big sporting venues? Also the idea that in previous years, the Australian Racing Drivers Club, they funded everything we see here today, virtually, all the pit facilities, out of retained profits. The profits from a particular year were reinvested into building bigger and better things. Now that the category of racing is bigger still, that the crowd across the 4 days of 144,800 people, there must be some profit being made there, and I think the government will have to ask some tough questions and say, why don't you fund a part of these upgrades out of your profits? That's really what the government may be expecting. Maybe instead of a $20 million grant, a better way of doing it would be part of it to be a loan that would be repaid out of profits. It is the icon of Australian motorsport. The facilities are getting old and tired, particularly when it rains. As we saw last year, the facility has become atrocious. But let's keep in mind, it's a once-a-year event. There are lots of other little events that happen throughout the year, but the big event is only once a year. This debate will continue for quite a long time, and it'll be interesting if IMG and the Bathurst City Council can elevate it to be a real election issue like they hope to do.
Peter, at 10 o'clock this morning, an email was sent out saying that the ACCC has been asked to investigate Avesco as to a restriction of trade for certain sections of the media.
Yes, that's right. There's quite a bit of frustration here in the media centre. Restrictions on people using email, restrictions on being able to upload your stories, your pictures and any other content onto your website, really seeming to be trying to build a barrier between the official websites and the official other media outlets and being a little bit tough on the others. You know, things like it was hard to get the official starting list and who the drivers were going to be because there was an embargo on that for some of the officially sanctioned media to have it first. Some of the frustrations like that has now overflowed into some elements of the media requesting the ACCC to have a look at this situation because is it a restrictive a restraint of trade type of practices that are being employed here? It's going to be very interesting. We know that NASCAR TV rights were sold for something like $1 billion not too long ago. TV rights and other media rights are valuable property, and really it is for the organisers
it's their property, they can exploit it the way they want, but there has to be a balance there. Free access to the media, free access to other people and their businesses. So that's where the ACCC are being asked to get involved. And I think we have to point out that the ACCC haven't responded yet. All we know is that they're being asked to have a look, and the ACCC being the independent body that's just going to have a look at these things, you know, they can come in with without any conflicts of interest or anything like that that some of the other parties may have, so they can come out with what will hopefully be a clear and decisive decision. Getting the ACCC involved is also a very clever practice by some of these small media outlets who don't have the legal resources to take on people like IMG or Avesco. The ACCC, you know, via taxes at work perhaps, to see whether we can have more choice in our websites and other things to keep posted of our favourite racing categories. I know for one, when I was spending time in Canada, how frustrating it was to get good quality, sort of up-to-the-minute results and information from this race. I would stay up all night in Canada trying to follow the race over the internet. Okay, it was 2 years ago now, and things have improved dramatically since then, but gee, it was frustrating. Some of these smaller websites really do have a case to make.
And of course, you then had to come back and do it yourself, and now you're not trapped over the other side of the world to benefit from it.
Yes, that's right. So instead of having a sleepless night, staying up watching it on the internet, now I've got to drive all the way back from Bathurst to Canberra, so it's going to be another late night anyway. And I think that's it's a very unfortunate this race won't be returning to the October long weekend that was promised. It looks as though Avesco are a little bit shy of taking on the National Rugby League after all, despite some of their boasting earlier in the year that their sport was bigger than rugby league. And if the rugby league chose to have their grand final on the long weekend, Avesco were pretty adamant earlier that they would not budge. Well, it looks as though Avesco, in some respects, as much as Tony Cochran can do it, they have to eat some humble pie and admit that within New South Wales at least, and that's a very important market for them, within New South Wales, the Rugby League has won this battle for now.
Well, Peter, it's been an exciting weekend right across the board, and of course plenty of news still to emanate from the results here this weekend as they head now to New Zealand and two really new debut races. But finally, good news for Western Australian fans and bad news for Victorian fans as they release the season schedule this weekend.
Yes, that's right. Fantastic that the series will return to Western Australia. We knew that there were issues and problems about the call to round already, and it looks like legal action is going to be taken there to try to recover some sanctioning fees from Bob Jane and the management of Calder. It's always a pity when things get nasty like that, but motorsport is a big business, and sometimes actions have to be taken, and I know that Bob Jane will be defending that vigorously. He thinks he has a very good case as well, so it's another example of the courts again have to step in there. And in terms of the remaining rounds this year, of course they are off to New Zealand, and they do have the grand final in Melbourne. And let's not forget, they're also one of the support categories at the IndyCar on the Gold Coast racing. So the year's far from over for these V8 drivers. A little bit of a pity, though, that the championship is pretty much wrapped up. I mean, congratulations are very due to the Holden Racing team and Mark Scaife for putting themselves in such a dominant position there, but it does weaken some of the interest in these remaining rounds.
Well, Peter, thanks very much for your efforts for us there at Bathurst. We wish you a safe return home on what we know is a fairly two-lane goat track back from Bathurst to Canberra, and we look forward to having you back in the studio again next week.
Yes, look forward to coming back next week, and we'll share with you some of the comments and snippets from some of the other media conferences held this weekend, and we'll go into a bit more detail about what Tony Cochran had to say about next year's championship.
Peter Norton, thanks very much, and we'll see you next week.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.